Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin made conscious uncoupling famous in back in 2014. But where does it stand now, over a decade later? When couples decide to part ways, the process can feel overwhelming and painful. You know, you've likely been through a breakup. But conscious uncoupling, it offers an alternative. It's a mindful way to separate that prioritizes respect, communication, and the well-being of everyone involved, including kids if you have them. Conscious uncoupling encourages, it's a shift in focus away from blame and resentment towards healing, growth, and a peaceful, ongoing relationship as co-parents, or an ability to move on in a healthy way if you don't have kids. If you're contemplating or already facing separation and wondering how to navigate it with kindness and respect, today is for you. We'll dive into what conscious uncoupling is, what you have to do on your own, very important, and strategies for effective co-parenting. And then my 8 steps for separating peacefully, whether you have kids or not. All right, so stay tuned. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, and I'm a practicing psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven with over 35 years of experience helping people just like you. Join me as I teach you actionable tips and strategies to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the pod, as people say. I'm trying to be groovy and cool, as you know. Welcome back. Very happy you're here. And as always, excited to do this topic because so many of you wrote in about it or asked about it or DM'd or whatever. Excuse, I have a little frog in my throat today. So, you know, you might hear me cough. I might have to take some water. I know my New York comes out, right? What is that? Okay. But I want to say, so here's what I want to say first. Today, I'll be talking about conscious uncoupling with or without kids, okay? I think everyone who's splitting up should attempt to consciously uncouple so you can have peace in the separation and most importantly, within yourself. I say a lot that wherever you end this relationship, you'll begin the next. So it is incredibly important that you end as peacefully as possible. So you don't subconsciously get into the same type of relationship again or bring old fears or resentments into a new relationship. Very, very important. So I also want to say that everything I'm saying here doesn't apply if there's been violence or abuse of any kind between the parents or with the kids. And that you're not going to be able to do this. I just want to say that. It's not going to happen. So, and it's also much harder. And it can be impossible depending on the diagnosis, but it's going to be harder to apply the tools and the ideas here if there's a significant mental health issue with one of you. All right, so active addiction, you know, severe personality disorders, destabilized depression or bipolar or anxiety. If any of those circumstances are present, I think it's best to read my Boundaries Made Easy book. I really do. I don't know what else to say. You know, I think it would be money very well spent for you. And but if you don't want to spend any money, you can search boundaries on my website and that as a keyword, and lots of stuff will come up where it'll be really helpful. And really go deep on practicing holding very firm with boundaries above all else. So if you can't consciously uncouple, to me, you have to really be a ninja with boundaries. Okay? All right. So what is conscious uncoupling? You know, that term gained a lot of popularity through the work of a psychotherapist named Catherine Woodward Thomas. And she was aiming to create a framework for ending relationships in a way that avoids the, you know, destructive habits typically associated with divorce or breaking up. And I will say, she talks about how only about 50% of the people she works with are actually going through like a divorce, so to speak. A lot of them have just know, common law, or just some people have been dating 6 weeks and they broke up and they can't get over this person. All of this apply, you know, everything I'm going to teach you today applies to whatever your pain might have been, or however long the relationship was, or short, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? Or being married or not, doesn't matter. Okay. So conscious uncoupling means that you're deciding to separate mindfully. Okay. So this is why it doesn't work if there's been violence or, you know, DV or something else, because you're deciding to separate mindfully with a focus on mutual respect, on empathy, and self-reflection. Now, if you're with a true narcissist, which please, you know, I feel like people throw that around so much and so little of the population is actually diagnosable with it. A lot of people might have narcissistic tendencies, but that doesn't mean you can't apply these concepts. Okay. And I'll talk about that. So the concept, excuse me, it can sound, I think, idealistic to people, or like, I personally am not a big fan of Gwyneth Paltrow. So, you know, you kind of hear it and you're like, oh, that's rich white ladies, you know, like, sure, consciously uncouple, real nice. And I think there's a lot of stigma around it in that way, that it's really for kind of certain people. And I will tell you, I've worked with people from all walks of life, all economic backgrounds, and I have been able to apply this in all those situations. So I do want to say that. So really, it's not economics or other things that get in the way. It is the any domestic violence and severe mental health issues. Okay, does that make sense? Those get in the way the most. So again, there's research that supports the benefits of this type of approach. Okay, so, and of course, you know me, I will link to it everywhere. But studies show that when couples part ways respectfully, they experience less long-term emotional distress, and the children in these families display better psychological adjustment, right? So that's really why you want to do it. And I will say, I'm not going to talk about myself a lot today, but I consciously uncoupled from my kid's dad, and we've been doing that ever since. We, you know, have had birthdays together and holidays and all kinds of wonderful things. They actually just moved out of state, he and his wife, my ex, and his wife. So I'm actually sad. I don't get to see them. I really, really love his wife, and she's awesome. Like, I miss them. I miss having them around. They were so great with like helping out if something happened, or they heard something happened to me. They were like, oh, do you need us to take the kids? Do you need anything? Can we bring food? I remember when I had COVID, my kid's bonus mom, we call her, you know, was dropping food off and at my door and all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, that's the way we want it to happen. And I am certainly not perfect or any of those things, but for me, it was really important for me, especially, but for because of the kids and having this environment where we all feel like a family still, and we all love and respect each other. I just spoke to my ex-sister-in-law the other day on the phone. You know, I think those things are really important. And my kids, sure enough, like my 21-year-old is in like a 3.5-year relationship. You know, it certainly hasn't turned him off to relationships. You know, You know, we don't want kids to get affected in their own emotional adjustment. But again, even if you don't have kids, to me, this would have been important no matter what, because I spent a significant amount of time with this person and loved him deeply enough to get married. And we had a great relationship for many, many, many years. So there, I don't want to just say, oh, that's all nothing now. And so for me, the conscious uncoupling was really important. So, I don't talk about like the reasons for my divorce or things like that, because first of all, I have kids and they listen, and it's not all their business. And also, it's me and their dad's business, and I keep that private, you know, for my own reasons. If you don't like that, that's fine, move on. But that's what we do. I think it's respect. If I didn't have children, I certainly wouldn't care as much. But having kids, I think there's a lot. I don't want them to be part of. So, but they see us getting along and they see everything great. Like, so they're fine, you know, they're good and moving on. Okay. So the three reasons why conscious uncoupling matters, even without kids. Again, I want to keep coming back there. So one is, and these are things I've just said, one is preserving your emotional well-being, right? When you consciously uncouple, it reduces resentment and conflict during that whole separation breakup process. And that really leads to long-term emotional healing. I know that that's the reason I got into my relationship with my beloved Gary and have such a good one with him. It feels so good. And I was really able to identify things that weren't working for me, which again, I'll talk to you about how to do. But I took all my cues from the research and from what I'd seen work with the couples I'd worked with and the individuals that I'd worked with who are going through things. And that's what I'm sharing with you today. So again, always know that whatever I will share my own stuff sometimes because I think it's fair for you to know me to some degree as this person who's, you know, throwing out information. But I think that all the things I teach you are things that I took from the research, like, oh, here's the steps. And, you know, I take it from varied places. And then I, working with my clients, would use things that I learned and saw what worked and what didn't, you know, really. And then I would hone that down into like a process that I've created to help people with all the things I think work the best. And you might say, well, gee, Abby, it sounds like your clients were guinea pigs. All clients are guinea pigs, you know. Nothing works for everyone exactly. So we're always kind of morphing and changing and moving, or you get new information later. I was just talking to a client I've been working with for a few months, and he finally shared that there was sexual abuse in his past. You know, like, oh, that's why these things haven't worked. You know, now I have more information. But anyway, I just want you to know that. Like, I feel like I'm your guide, not your guru. You know, I'm guiding you and I'm trying to help with things that we know are, and I always say researched and evidence-based because that's what we know works with the preponderance of people. So reading a book by Dr. Phil about his happy marriage, which by the way, I think ended, but regardless, you know, it's like, here's what Robin and I do. I hate that crap. I hate that crap because it's crap. It's just, here's what our little relationship, you have no idea if that's going to work for you. You know, these two rich white people, here's what they did. Like, so what? Okay, great. You know, but is that what everyone should be reading and thinking, oh, I really respect Dr. Phil, so I have to read all that? You know, no. Go with what works for most people and then take it from there. And even the things I share, you know, people are listening from Malaysia and Israel and Spain. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that are different culturally or ethnically or, you know, in different ways that, you know, you got to take what you can and leave the rest, right? You have to just take everything with a little bit of a grain of salt, depending on where you are. But this is a good place to start. That's what I would tell you. Don't just dismiss it all. You know, and listen. So, do you love that? That was a little bossy Jewish mother interlude. Okay. So, by ending the relationship, I do want to say that by ending it respectfully, both partners are less likely to carry unresolved feelings into future relationships. And that means you can really have healthier connections later, which to me is really important. The second reason you want to do this conscious uncoupling is maintaining mutual respect. So again, even without children, you have likely shared significant time, memories, experiences with this person. So when you consciously uncouple, to me, it's really honoring what you built together. Again, even if that was 6 weeks or whatever, you know, you're treating each other with kindness and respect throughout the separation. And it really helps ensure that the breakup doesn't tarnish, you know, the positive aspects of your relationship. I find that people flip all the time. They go into romanticizing or, you know, he or she was a jerk. And you don't need to do that. You don't need to romanticize and you don't need to blame. You can just be in what is. And yeah, you know, wow, that was so great when we did X, Y, or Z. Oh, I loved when we traveled together. We always had such epic, fun times. And But when we actually just sort of live together day to day, it's hard for us. So yeah, we're great traveling partners. We're just not great, you know, living partners. You know, you're allowed to do that. So don't throw out one for the other. And the third thing I would say is it really helps you avoid social and really financial fallout. You know, friends, family, shared social networks can really feel the effects of a messy breakup. And when you consciously uncouple, it helps sort of minimize that collateral damage. It allows for really a smoother transition with all those shared communities or financial arrangements, you know, splitting assets, leases, pets, all that. So it's really good. Okay. Here is the solo work you need to do or focus on. Okay. So here's what you need to really look at. So you need to, no matter what else, you have got to create an inner calm first and foremost. You are responsible for your own emotional management. This means you can't be a victim. Your emotions or boundaries can't change because of something your, you know, soon to be ex is or isn't doing. I did an entire episode on why you're obsessed with your ex and what to do about it. So I'm going to link to that because I can't get into all that here again. So take time, you know, read or listen to that. But the next thing you need to do or read, I think, or, you know, listen, is my episode on the step-by-step guide to managing your emotions. Again, I will link to all these in under the video. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. If you're seeing my straight hair if you're on YouTube, because I tried to tame the Jufro. And if you're, you know, anyway, my Patreon, if people don't know about my One Love Collective online, it's a paid community, which is so good. It's going so well. I love everyone there. I'm having a ball in this community. And you get live Q&As with me, and I'll answer your questions directly right there, and you can send them in, and you get a lot of extra freebies, you know, like journaling prompts or worksheets or tons of stuff that I want to just really give you to make every episode more of a learning experience. I still will give you, if you are not in the One Love Collective, you will absolutely still get freebies too, which I have a couple today. And so don't ever think I'll diminish what you get. But if you really like me and like what I do here, you will love the One Love Collective. So I'm just saying. You can sign up on my website. There's a Patreon tab at the top, or you can go to patreon.com/AbbyMetcalf. Either way, you can find a way in. And there's like three levels you could be in, but I really hope you're in the ones with the live Q&As because I think that's the best bang for the buck. And I'm planning to do more live Q&As in the future for those groups because I love doing it. I already did one and it was very fun. So if you're on Patreon, you'll get everything in one place. You don't have to go look on a video and go to the website and whatever. But if you're not, it's fine. You just have to do a little more work. So go to the website, find the episode under Relationship Tips and Tools or the blog, you know, which is the blog or the podcast episode. You'll find the downloads. Okay. So, or the links to past sessions or the research or all that. Because it's really important that you know that you are in charge and you need to do the work to get in control of how you're thinking and feeling. I find that a lot of people, depending on how the partner acts or the ex-partner, they're suddenly thrown into a tailspin. They see that they're dating on Instagram or whatever, and it's like, oh, their life is ruined. You can't do that. I'm going to Jewish mother yell at you. That's some bullshit. I'm going to swear to make it really clear. I try not to swear on this podcast. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This person that you've separated from, or maybe they broke up with you, I don't care, either way, they don't deserve this room in your head. It's craziness. And again, there's a biological reason for this, but you still need to take control. So that's why you need to listen to those other two episodes. I also did one on moving on after a divorce or breakup and the steps for that. So I will link to that. I'm writing it down. Okay, sorry. I'll link to all those. Okay. So the second thing is that you need to work on solo is to be very clear that you co-created this relationship. There is no one to blame. No one to blame. You're not to blame either, but they're certainly not to blame. You have to take just full responsibility, not blame, responsibility for your side of the street. And so it's really best to ask, you know, again, I always use that tone, the tone in your head, I want to be different. So it's not, oh my God, what did I do? Or what was I thinking? What was I thinking? It's instead, huh, what was I thinking? You know, it's that. It's a different approach to talking to yourself. And I want you to ask yourself, what have you learned here? What are some wonderful takeaways to help you as you move forward? What did you learn about yourself? This is such a good time to create, you know, I love it, the why not list. Remember, I've said it in a bunch of episodes. A why not list is so great because what you're doing, it's not a list about what you hated about this person. It's not a list of blame to yourself even or them or anything or the situation. It's a list of why you weren't a good fit. Oh, she liked to be out all the time and I like to stay home all the time. He didn't value honesty, and it's my top value. You know, it's that you're just listing the reasons, the why or why not. And I will tell you right here that never ever create a pros and cons list for your relationship. Never ever. You know why? I think you know why, if you've been listening long enough. Why is because you could have 20 pros and just two cons, but those two cons are the most important thing. They're the deal breakers. So making those lists doesn't help. You can't compare them. Instead, what I like people to do is make a list of their top three deal breakers in a relationship, their top three priorities, their top three values, the top three things you need to feel safe in a relationship, to feel like this person really has my back. Okay. List those top three things and then say, did my partner have one, two, or three? That's how you do it. And you will generally notice they had none of them. So, and now you know, by the way, going into your next relationship, the three things you're really looking for. Those lists people make, I want them to be 6 foot two and make $100,000 a year and not have kids. And those lists are garbage. They are so no help. Okay. How a person looks, if you're focusing on that, I don't even know what to do with you. I say with love, Jewish mother love. I mean, come on. Really? Really? Like, focus on what you really need. Because I will tell you, that person will look so hot to you sooner than later. You will be so attracted to them. You will be so into them if they are giving you these things you really, really need. Okay. You'll see. So, take the rest and put it on the bottom. Yeah, it's really nice. Also, if, you know, my Gary is 6'4". I really enjoy it because I'm tall. But I never had that on my list that he has to be taller than me. Matter of fact, my first husband was shorter than me. Sorry, not shorter. Same height. He was like an inch taller than me. Like we were almost the same. And certainly when I was wearing heels, I was taller, which is great. You know, my mom was really tall and my dad was short. So I grew up with that. So I think that's part of what helps me see, you know, different, that those things don't matter as much. But anyway, the third is to create a mindset where everybody wins. Oh, everybody wins. Is that what? So much of uncoupling comes down to transactions. You know, if you're rich, it's like, oh, I get the house and you get the cars, right? You get this much time with the kid. And then if you're not, you know, for just normal people, it's like, oh, you get this much time with the kids and I get this much, right? You take the sofa and I'll keep the dishes. You get X amount of money and I get Y. And that's the part of the problem. So everything becomes this focus on what's fair, what's fair, what's exactly fair. And by the way, both of you have a different idea of what's fair. We see this all the time. If one a person in the couple was working and the other one wasn't, they're like, I was supporting you for years. Like it can become like, I don't need to support you now. You got to do that yourself now. Instead of like, oh, this person raised my children and kept my home to going, or really in a lot of cases, I'll tell you, I have to stop people. And this is men and women, by the way. I have to stop them and say, you know, you had this certain lifestyle, or you were able to build your business in such a way because your partner had more freedom to take care of the kids and schedule dental appointments and remind you of when the games were and all that. It's like, you know, all the emotional labor gets and the physical labor gets put out, you know, because again, it becomes this idea. And as you, if you're the other, you know, the person who wasn't working, it's very fair to you to get half the money, you know. So you're going to have different ideas of what fair is. So you got to get out of that. You have to get out of the keeping score mindset, again, especially if you have kids, but even if you don't, because in the end, fairness isn't what this is all about, right? It's really not. So you're trying to have things be equitable, you know, to a certain degree, obviously, but get out of like, well, it's not fair. It's not, if you hear yourself saying it's not fair, then you're focusing on the wrong thing. Okay. You really are, because you're getting to some transactional thing, and love is not transactional. Love is not a exchange of power or money or anything else, right? Love is abundant. It grows. It encompasses all. It's all those things. Are you picking up what I'm laying down? Okay. Number four is forgive and move on. I'm yelling. You got to forgive. I didn't say forgive and forget. I just said forgive. You need to find self-compassion and forgiveness for yourself. Ha ha ha. I see you. And compassion and forgiveness for your partner or ex-partner. If you can't, you will absolutely not be able to do this process. See, you can kind of stop listening now, because if you're holding all that, what the partner is, your ex or whoever's feeling, and your kids or whoever else is around you, is that you still have this anger and resentment, and that's out there. Remember, our conscious brain processes information at a rate of 40 bits per second, while our subconscious brain processes information at a rate of 11 million bits per second. I quote Timothy Wilson's research all the time on this, because your subconscious is that 11 million bits that people are getting, that I don't like this person, it's unfair, I resent them, I resent the past, that's coming out. That's what people pick up on. Not, you know it because you've had it. You've had someone all smiley at work who you thought was full of crap. And even though they were saying all the right things, you were like, I get a funny feeling about that person. My gut tells me, right? That's the 11 million bits. That's science. So I am guaranteeing you, if that stuff is present, so you really have to work on this. And I'll tell you, so I have a forgiveness masterclass on the website. I have a bunch of episodes on forgiveness you can also listen to or watch. There are books on forgiveness all around. I have a loving kindness meditation. It's a video on YouTube, which we'll link to all this, because believe it or not, the loving kindness meditation will take you the farthest. It really will. There's great research. I use the script that's from the research because it's my melodious voice. I know you love my voice. On this video, and you will, it's a true, like, it's what the research says to do and think and say. And so I recorded that and I made it free, and it's up on YouTube. You can find it now without even going through the website by just searching Loving Kindness Abby Metcalf. But you've got to learn to forgive. You really do. And again, it's a lot of forgiving yourself. A lot of you is just angry at yourself for allowing certain things in the relationship, for it going on maybe so long, for allowing yourself, you're telling yourself, oh, we were only together 6 weeks and he said he loved me or she did. And now, and then they left and I was a sucker and what's wrong with me? You know, whatever it is, you really do have to work on this forgiveness piece, and you have to find the compassion for yourself and others. Okay. Got to do it. I don't know what else to say. Got to do it. Got to do it. Or again, this path is not for you. And really, you just have to go back to the solo work. You know, again, well, that is the solo work, but you have to go back deeper into maybe therapy or something else so that you can get to that place. Okay. So let's talk about my 8 steps. And really, what these 8 steps are, it's about starting the difficult conversations, not conversations. You're going to have more than one, about conscious uncoupling. Okay. So, because bringing up the idea of a peaceful split can be really daunting. And maybe you've even had crazy fights before about it. Who knows? You know, I'm leaving, I'm divorcing you, I'm going, you know, whatever. I don't know. So here are some tips. These are my 8 steps for initiating the conversation. And again, all the conversations. So you have to be prepared with these steps every time you speak to your person. Okay. Step one, and I'll get through them as quickly as I can. Step one is to be ready. You've got to be in the right mental frame when you're approaching the conversation. If you're thinking things like, oh, it's going to be terrible, it's going to suck, it's going to be really hard, they're going to be upset, then that's what you're going to get. If you're going in and you're prepared to do battle, you're going to end up doing battle and you'll probably get hurt. So, or hurting others. You can't have an open, connecting conversation if you're approaching it like a war, because you absolutely will both be on the defensive and you can't have mutual understanding from that place. It's impossible. Again, 40 million bits versus 11 million bits. Yes, people pick up. Step two is you have to identify a time and place. You know, set up a time and place that makes sense to have a connecting talk. Don't have it at the very end of a long day because you'll both be exhausted and it's hard to find the mental reserves, right? I often say you have to connect to correct. So it's really great to have these at a time when you actually are getting along and are doing well. And I know at those times you're waffling and you're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't break up or whatever, but you can't do that. So if you're sure about the breakup, then look for a moment. You know, no matter what, just try to be as fresh as possible. And by the way, sometimes you've had the first conversation and everything was whatever, and then all of a sudden you'll get some passive aggressive remark from your partner, or something will come up and you'll like snap back or whatever. It's like, be very careful. That's why you're doing the solo work, to manage your emotions. Do you see? Because in those moments, you have to stop and go, you know what? This isn't clearly not a good time for us to talk. I'm not willing to have a conversation with you because that didn't feel good. And so let's set up a time to do it right now. Let's set up a time. And the other person will likely be like, I don't want to set up, you know, whatever, but that's fine. You're like, I'll email you later. And then email them later, like, hey, clearly you have things that are upsetting you. I want us to work this out. You're going to do what step three is here. And you're going to set intention and state your intentions. You really need to state your intentions out loud first. And both of you, that would be the goal. If the other person refuses to do it, fine, but you should do it. And it's really about what your intention is for this conversation. And I've said this over and over, right? How to have conversations that feel good. This is what you do. It's my intention to listen with an open heart to everything you say. It's my intention to think about how much I love you and how much I want to understand your point of view. It's my intention that we'll both walk away from this conversation feeling connected and heard. It's my intention to bring willingness and thoughtfulness to the table. It's my intention that we'll find a mutually beneficial solution and both walk away satisfied, content, happy, whatever. Do you see where, again, are you picking up what I'm laying down, right? Do you see where this is going? Setting intention really puts everyone in the right frame of mind and will program, you remember your reticular activating system is coming up too here, to look for good things. And remember, your RIS is a filter between your conscious and your subconscious mind. And it will, you know, whatever you're thinking about consciously, it sends it to your subconscious to look for that thing. So if you're thinking, my partner's a jerk and they never listen, then that's all you're going to see. Your partner, that's all the RIS will show you, your partner being a jerk and not listening. But when they do listen and they're not a jerk and they're kind and thoughtful or whatever, your RIS will actually filter that out. And I have a short video on this, so I'll link that also in all the places. But it really helps people stay focused and mindful during the conversation when you set intention. It's often even, I've found that it really even changes the approach and tone of the other person, as because they realize what they were about to say or how they're about to say it was in line with the intentions you both discussed. So I've talked to a ton of clients who said, oh yeah, I was having this conversation, and then of whatever, not even just conscious uncoupling, you know, And then I saw my partner kind of biting their tongue or starting to say the thing I was predicting they would say, and they stopped themselves. And I'm telling you, that's what's the beauty of setting intention. Again, you have to connect to correct, right? So, and again, stating your intention helps everyone feel safer, helps you feel more connected. If you do nothing else, you should totally do this step. Let me just say this, okay? And again, I'll insert that little video about the RAS. Step four is you have to be curious. I did an entire episode on curiosity. I will link to it. But actively think, I think it's called How Curiosity Will Make Your Relationship Awesome or something, because it's true. So for anybody, it's all about curiosity. You need to actively think of being curious during this conversation. You want to listen like you're wrong. You want to understand where your partner is coming from and why they feel the way they do. So when, if they, and they probably will, if you're the one wanting this and you're the one starting the conversation, they likely will be defensive and hurt and all those things. And you can't control that. So don't even ask me, how do I do it so they don't get defensive or hurt? Forget it. But you do it by following these. You do it the best by following these. But you can't control how other people react to you. You can control how you act back, how you react to that person. That's what you can control. So you could change the course of the conversation by not falling into a certain pattern, right? So again, listen like you're wrong and be in a mode of seeking to understand as opposed to being understood, right? And your inside voice should sound something like, if they get upset, let's say, wow, I really didn't mean that, you know, what my partner picked up, or I knew this would be hard, but I know I've been as loving as I can. So I wonder why they're having this reaction. You know, what's really going on here? You know, that metacognition, that sort of fly in the wall thing. That's what's beautiful when you take care of yourself first. And again, remind yourself why you're listening. It's because you love and care about this person and you want to find a loving resolution. It's because you love and care about yourself and want to find a loving resolution. It's because you need to continue maybe to co-parent, and it'll improve everything if you can find a way to hear what they're saying so you can co-create effective solutions. And this is something I have to remind everyone. Again, if you have kids, you're going to be connected to this person the rest of your life. The rest of your life, you will be connected to this person. You have got to figure this out, right? My kid's dad and I are going to be connected. We're going to be at their weddings together. We're going to be sitting with grandchildren together. Hopefully, I'm old. We're both old, but you never know. You know what I mean? We're going to be at college graduations now. We were at the high school graduations together as a family. You know, it's like this person and you are going to cross paths forever. You made these beautiful little people together. You got to figure this out. You can't be in this tug the rest of your life. And God forbid, I can't think of anything worse than my kids thinking they had to separate their dad and his wife from me at like their high school graduations. Oh, I got you tickets over here and them tickets over here. Oh my God, that would make me so sad. I'm going to cry thinking about it. Like we're at their wedding and we have to be at different tables or, it really breaks my heart. And so, you know, if you're doing that to your kids, you need to take a step back. You really have to think about it. Sorry, getting teary. Okay. Step five is stay mindful during the talk. I find what a lot of times happens is people get all prepared for the talk, do all the right things and set it up, get a good time and place, and they're really in a good space. And then as the talk happens, they're not mindful during it. So they react, they get angry, they get resentful, they lose their shit, they whatever. So you have to keep noticing your reactions during the conversation. When you notice yourself getting defensive or angry because you're being mindful and working on yourself, bring yourself back to present. You're going to have to really stay in touch with your feelings throughout the conversation. My thing is I notice if my shoulders are tensing up, you know, if they're pushing up towards my ears, and I practice taking a breath and pushing my shoulders down to relax. And it's so effective. And just taking that nice breath in and out, pushing my shoulders down, so friggin' effective. Note, making sure my jaw is loose, right? You know, I mean, seriously, very, very effective. So if you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it.
I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
You want to really, your goal is to name your own feelings as often as possible in this dialogue. So, and this can even be part of the conversation. You know, you can stop and ask, and I've done this a million times with clients, with friends, with whoever, just stop and said like, hey, how are you feeling right now? Like, let me just interrupt you for a second. We can come back. What are you feeling right now? I will guarantee you pretty much that they're going to tell you what they're thinking. And you just have to stick with it. And they're going to say, well, you know, how are you feeling right now? Well, like, you know, you're not understanding me and I'm feeling a little defensive. Oh, they might say that I'm feeling a little defensive, which is good. But mostly they'll say, they'll try to explain, you know, I was just trying to tell you about, you know, what happened the other night. And I really feel like, you know, you did me dirty and blah, blah, blah. And that's not how they're feeling right now. Feeling right this minute. And then if they say angry or resentful, say, is there anything else under that? Because they'll get to it. They're feeling sad. They're feeling abandoned. They're feeling rejected. That's what they're feeling. And that's what, remember, anger is the bodyguard of fear, that line from the author Celeste Ng that I quote all the time. Celeste Ng, give me some love. Send me an email. If anyone knows her, tell her I love her. You know, so what is that anger, resentment, frustration, all the same, resentment, all those things, rage, helplessness, hopelessness, are all covering up something else. Again, or ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? If it's a fear-based emotion, if you're feeling resentment or hopelessness or defensiveness, take a moment and bring yourself back to center. You know, have a mantra at the ready. There's nothing scary here. We're going to work this out because we have to. That's the only option I'm leaving open. There's nothing for me to fear. We will absolutely find a way. You know, you have to be certain in it. And again, like I said, taking a deep breath is an excellent thing to do when you're noticing any fear-based emotion emerging. You know, again, impatience, frustration. So take that deep breath because it's going to stimulate your vagus nerve, and which stimulates your sympathetic nervous system and helps you stay calm and in the moment. So be as mindful as possible whenever your partner is speaking. And I know some marriage gurus and others talk about like taking notes during the conversation, but I don't like that. Don't take notes during the conversation. The only reason you would take notes is to rebut. Tell me I'm wrong. Think about it. The only reason you take notes is because you want to remember something you want to say back to that thing. And it takes you out of the intimacy and connection of the moment. It also means that you're missing so much of what the other person is saying, your partner is saying, because you're not able to read their body language. Your brain is somewhere else. And just what they're saying, you're not hearing it as you're writing. You can't do both. You're not going to come back point by point and tell them how wrong they are. So why take notes? Really, think about how you're feeling when they're talking. Notice your own. That's what I want you noticing. Wow, I'm feeling really defensive. I feel like they're misunderstanding me. Okay. Just allow that like a cloud passing by and just be in the moment of trying to understand. That's the only thing you want to ask. And you don't have to take notes for that at the end. You want to ask questions. Can you tell me more about whatever? Have you been feeling this way our whole relationship, or did it just start? Or, you know, ask questions. So do your best, you know, stay present. Remember that you're focused on a loving outcome. You know, keep coming back to that. We will absolutely find a way through this and be there for one another. Absolutely. I'm going to be the dominant vibration with my partner, and we're going to come to a mutually beneficial, loving arrangement about whatever is going on. There is never a time in this conversation where you should interrupt, think about, again, rebutting or retaliatory remarks, keeping score, you know, about, what about you and what you did, right? There's never a time you should be denying the other person's point of view. You know, you misunderstood what I meant, right? There's not a time when you should be refusing to participate, right? Oh, I'm tired of this. I'm not going to discuss it with you again. You're not listening when you do any of these things. And it's a signal to reset yourself and be mindful. Remember, it's absolutely fine to stop a conversation or take a break if you're noticing you're getting worked up or hurt and just can't seem to stop feeling, you know, you just can't stop feeling that way. Just be honest, right? And you can say something like, I always try to give you examples of what to say. Hey, you know, your feelings are important, but right now I'm noticing that I'm feeling defensive and taking things personally. So, you know, let's just take a break and let's come back in 30 minutes. You can say that. Make sure that when you come back, that you restate your intentions, by the way, so you can start better. And they might, and as you ask, okay, we set our intentions again. Can you say again what you're trying to say before and maybe say it differently? Because I clearly wasn't hearing it before. I was getting shut down and I don't want to shut down. I want to connect. I want to hear you. It's a nice way to come back. Step six is you want to ask, again, clarifying questions. So at the beginning or at some point during the conversation, ask that they give you maybe a signal when they're done so you can respond and ask questions. And this will help you not interrupt. And it's going to ensure that your partner feels that you're fully present in the conversation, you know, in that conversation, and you're giving them space and time to share, because this is how you're going to come out the other side. Don't interrupt unless it feels abusive, you know, and in that case, you just stop the conversation and reset another day or another time. And it's important to remember that your partner's reactions, their complaints, their comments, their feedback is about what they need, not what you need. So listen for what they need, which isn't always what they're asking for. And you want to ask clarifying, you know, those collaborative questions after they're done speaking. Right? That's the way to go. And I'm going to have a list of, if you haven't downloaded it yet, I don't know what you're waiting for if you haven't downloaded it yet. I have a free list of collaborative questions. And always for transparency, whenever you download something, like again, unless you're in the already in my Patreon, whenever you download something, you will automatically be put onto my love letter list, which is just that. I don't sell anything. I'm not trying to, I don't just tell you, oh, my week was hard or whatever. I don't do any of that. It's a love letter. So it's something where, you know, I'm trying to inspire you for the week, help you think different for the week, something like that. And you can unsubscribe. It's fine. There's lots of people on there. I will not notice after you download the thing. It's fine. But it comes twice a month. I call it Love Bites when it comes twice a month. And then if you can sign up for the paid version of the love letter, which is that love letter that you would get anyway twice a month. So you could always try it out that way. And then you would get it every week though. Every single week you'd get it. And it's $1.99 a month. And if you want to prepay for the year, which is $19.99, where you also save money, you also get my free Five to Thrive Relationships Edition course, which is a once a week email that takes 5 minutes to do the little thing that I say to improve your relationships. So I think it's a no-brainer because you're getting something that isn't $19.99 that I'm selling on the website right now for $19.99. And you're getting the love letter every week to help inspire you. But it's obviously there's no pressure. Okay. So do what feels good to you. So let's get back to talking. Okay. So you can clarify what the other person said, you know, what your partner is saying. With the, you know, ever popular and effective, by the way, you know, what I heard you say is, right? You can do that. You can also get more information by asking, again, those collaborative questions. Like, can you tell me more about X? Can you give me an example of whatever so I better understand what you mean, right? These are ways that we get more information that's helpful. Remember not to SAC, S-A-C, no giving suggestions, offering advice, or criticizing, okay? So asking questions, it's meant to gather more information. So you can't ask questions disguised as suggestions. I see you. Have you tried this? Or have you thought of that? You know, maybe you should. No. Those are suggestions, and that's criticism. Suggestions are criticism. It means that you think what they're doing is wrong. So you're giving, or they don't know, or whatever. So you're giving them a suggestion or, you know, some sort of advice to do it better. And that's critical. Okay. And step 7, you need to take responsibility no matter what is said to you in whatever way. You still have responsibility in this relationship. I don't care if your partner is reactive and not listening well. You co-create every single relationship you're in. It means you have to take responsibility for your side of the street. I keep saying that because it's true. If you're still feeling hurt and upset by your partner, that is your responsibility. Your feelings are your responsibility. Your boundaries are your responsibility. Your reactions, your responsibility. There will be no victims here in Abby Land, okay? If you want to be a victim, you are saying, I want to be sad and miserable. I don't want to really change my situation. That's fine. It breaks my heart if that's what you think. But you will never, ever, ever, ever really have healthy, secure, loving, amazing relationships with friends, with parent, with anybody, because you can't when you come from that mindset. If you're blaming others, so this isn't about blame. So don't go there for anybody. I've got, again, you can tell I have no patience for the pity party and victimhood. I just don't, because it's not helpful. Yes, one time venting, whatever. But if you're saying the same things over and over, you're no longer venting. And matter of fact, you're making it worse because of how your neurology works, those neural pathways work. You're making it worse for yourself, not better. If I thought I was making you better, I'd say, if there was any research to say it was helpful, I'd be like, go for it. Be a victim. Pity party out. But there's not. It's the opposite. So you got to put on, what do I always say? You know, you're saying it now. You have to put on your big boy or big girl panties and do the one next thing you can. And you have to not give up. Like, this is it. Like, you're going to keep striving. You know, again, if you're at work and a problem comes, can you imagine saying to your boss, like, I tried something, didn't work. I'm not going to do that anymore. Or I'm just going to sit here and complain about it over and over. Can you imagine? We never do it at work. We find help. We go back to our supervisor. We maybe feel bad that we failed, but we keep going. You can't just stop. Like, it still has to happen. And as a matter of fact, often you get inventive and creative and you figure out other ways. And because this is your job, you got to do it. Well, this is the same. You got to do it. You got to do it. So don't give up. And step 8, did I say there were 7 steps or 8 steps? There's 8. Sorry if I lied. Could have lied. I've done it before because I forget. Step 8 is you really need to acknowledge the hurt feelings without dwelling on them. So this is good after I told you not to have a pity party, because you do have to acknowledge hurt feelings, but you can't dwell on them. You have to acknowledge, you know, the pain, the complexity of this situation, of this relationship, without diving into past grievances. This shows really respect for your partner's feelings and your own, and it sets the tone for true empathy. So, and the research has found, right, empathetic communication improves conflict resolution and increases cooperation during challenging conversations like this. See, research. By setting an example of empathy, you really are encouraging your partner to follow suit. Okay. So you, and I have an entire episode on empathy, which of course we'll link to. I'm writing that down because I don't know if I put the links in earlier. You should really read that. It's very important. Empathy is a big skill that it's really important to learn in life. So let's briefly talk about why conscious uncoupling is especially important for co-parents when children are involved. Okay. For co-parents. that means children are involved, Abby. Yes, I know. Thank you. So when children are involved, the stakes are really higher. You know, again, research confirms that parental conflict, particularly hostile exchanges, is a strong predictor of psychological and behavioral issues in kids. So a conscious uncoupling approach helps protect your kids by reducing the conflict and ensuring that they see their parents as allies rather than, you know, adversaries. So kids benefit when they see that their parents can still work together in some form of harmony, even if they're no longer a couple, right? So in the majority of cases, you want to think of still being, again, a family, even though you're not a couple. That's where you're trying to go. So if you're the healthier person, parent, and likely you are, if you're the one here with me, then you want to be the dominant vibration in the relationship and in the family. And I will tell you, this is big. I have a calibration exercise, again, on YouTube, which you can listen to. And I have an entire episode on being the dominant vibration in the room. And I say this for everybody. You should be the dominant vibration in the room. You walk in with your energy. Like, you know, sometimes I'll hear people say, well, I was trying to have a good talk and I was really optimistic and I went in there with a good attitude. And then my partner just wouldn't stop complaining and wouldn't stop whatever. And I was like, so that means you went to their bad mood? Why is it the assumption that we go to someone's bad mood? Why didn't you bring him to your good mood? Why did you give up the ghost and go to the bad mood? You have full responsibility here. Don't just assume, well, someone's in a bad mood, so I'm in a bad mood. What kind of crap is that? Again, crap. I've said crap a lot. Bullshit. Yeah, I've used some language in this episode. So here are three strategies for peaceful co-parenting after separation, okay? So once you've decided to uncouple, hopefully consciously, it is crucial, to develop a co-parenting strategy that maintains the peace. And I would say, so this works if you're consciously uncoupling or not. So there are a few, I just want to give you a few strategies to help you navigate, you know, the new dynamic as co-parents while keeping conflict low and communication very open. So number one, if you do nothing else, do this, you have to create kind of a co-parenting plan together. And a co-parenting plan establishes the details of the shared parenting responsibility and really helps avoid misunderstandings. So, you know, it covers schedules, holidays, school events, medical decisions, financial responsibilities, all that. But here's my favorite tool to do it, okay? And it's to have a weekly business meeting. Weekly business meeting, just you and your ex, okay? And again, any couples that are even that are together, I tell them to do this. I have this. And you want to have it at least once a week in the beginning. You might have to have it more in the beginning as you're negotiating the ins and outs of different households. And again, research suggests that structured communication like regular check-ins improves co-parenting relationships by setting clear expectations. So it's not just because Abby said. And because I love you so much, you can also download my co-parenting meeting checklist so you know you're on point, okay? So you can get the collaborative questions and the co-parenting meeting checklist. I did do an episode on a couples business meeting, which was really focused on couples doing it, but you should do it too. And what I recommend is having a Google Doc or something like that. And then you just put things on the agenda. And again, I have this all in the download the couples business meeting, checklist, but you know, you're basically having some sort of Google Doc and you're saying, putting things on it all the time. Like, oh, we have to talk about summer camp and we have to talk about, you know, graduation and we have to talk whatever, I don't know, or this week's schedule for soccer. Whatever it is, you put it on there. And then when you meet, you just prioritize what you're going to talk about. And then you go to each thing. And I will say that even if you're part of a couple right now listening to this, it's a really great thing to do. It helped, you know, Gary would feel like I was always bugging him, you know, like, or nagging, like, oh, could you, this light bulb needs to be changed. You're tall. You don't, you won't need a ladder to change it. Or, oh, I need a lock on the garage door or whatever. And I would have all these things and I'd ask him. And, you know, when you're asking someone all week, all these things, it does feel like nagging, right? And instead, when you put things on the agenda and then you just talk about them once a week, and then you talk about a deadline for it, and, you know, an outcome for it and who's responsible, it goes way better. Okay. Two is that I want you to take care of low-hanging fruit. So there are always lots of feelings when you separate, even if you do it in a great way. So it's really easy to fight about the little things, like why the dog hasn't been taken to the vet, or the reason all the kids' cleats ended up at one parent's house or the other, because trust me, that's going to happen. So my recommendation is to buy two or three of everything right up front. This is what I did. I bought a bunch of cleats. I know it's money. I always say I could make money, but I can't make peace. And to me, that's what, you know, if I see two more clients a week, I could buy more of these and that would really help, you know what I mean? Or whatever. And, you know, most people have a salary job and I understand that, but I also bought cleats used, just for the record. There's a place near me that sells used equipment for sports. Great. Go in there, you know? And so I didn't buy them brand new all the time, or I would go to outlets or other things. Yeah. I wasn't trying to spend, you know, $150 over and over. But I will tell you, buy two or three lunch bags. You can go to Target and get them for nothing. You know, buy two or all the, you know, the Tupperware containers. If you have little kids, get a crap load. You know, you'll still end up, I promise, with all the socks at one parent's house. It's just going to happen eventually. But instead of it being a day-to-day issue, you'll have more time and space before these annoying things come up, okay? And it really helps. I also recommend telling your kids' school that there are two separate homes. So you need two of any textbooks. So you can leave one in each house. And we did this all the way through my kids' school so that we didn't, again, have them running back and forth for a certain book or something like that. You know, they still had to bring their science notebook, you know, back and forth, couldn't make two of that. But again, it was less to forget. It was less to worry about. And it's really good. And then three, I would say, is to formally split your duties. It's kind of like what I mentioned earlier. It's really easier if one parent is in charge. Like my kid's dad, he took care of all the dental appointments. He took care of, I mean, a lot of that stuff, making sure they were, you know, the braces, you know, the orthodontic appointments. So like he just was so on top of that. It was great. And would just tell me, hey, here's half of this, or here, you know, here's what we have to pay for that. But I was so, so grateful. Vaccines, whatever. He just stayed on top of that stuff. Like we made an agreement and that's what he did. And I couldn't be more grateful. Still, I'm grateful. Like it was such a great thing. And it really helped me not have to, like, one thing off my emotional plate. I was often in charge because I love baseball. So, you know, I would go to the baseball meeting or the softball meeting, and I would, you know, that first parent meeting, and I would sign up for the, you know, volunteering and all that. I sort of would manage a lot of that stuff and, you know, making sure my kids had rides to games or whatever. And even between us, who was going to a game or who was, we couldn't always make it, both of us. And so we wanted to make sure someone was there. Sometimes it was, you know, their dad's wife, you know, their bonus mom. She'd show up. She's amazing again. So you just, you know, you just want to have all that, right? And you can, again, catch up with one another in the weekly business plan in that meeting. So you have it. And just as a last note, I'd say this, if it really remains strained and you've tried all the things, and even if you've decided on consciously uncoupling and it's really feeling great and all that, and then it doesn't for whatever reason, or things get off course, you could consider what we call parallel parenting. That's an approach that's really useful. It just basically means that you would formally split duties, like, even further. And it allows each parent to maintain a role without like frequent conflicts. So for one family I worked with, parallel parenting meant that each parent took responsibility for every single thing related to the kids, right? So mom handled the medical appointments and the school projects. Dad managed the extracurriculars and the family outings. You know, it just reduced the direct interactions. So they were avoiding triggers, a lot of the triggers, and still supporting their kids' needs. So it really helped. So let me just say my final thoughts. My final thoughts are that conscious uncoupling isn't about erasing the past or pretending everything's perfect and great. It's about approaching separation with mindfulness, with empathy, and respect, again, especially if kids are involved. And it might not be easy, but I have to tell you, and again, I've done this with hundreds of clients now, the rewards of this approach are so worth it. Your self-esteem goes up. You have lower stress. If you have kids, you have happier ones. You have healthier future relationships. I mean, it's so good. So I really want you to give these strategies a try. Again, unless you're in a situation, as I mentioned earlier, that precludes it. And, you know, and really remember that healing and growth, they take time. But when you commit to a conscious, compassionate approach, you really can navigate separation with dignity, respect, and again, even love. So there you go. So that's it for today. So I love when you stay with me to the end. I've already cried in the middle, so maybe I won't cry now saying goodbye to you. As always, I'm so grateful for our time together. Really grateful to have this large community. I'm grateful for the Patreon smaller community too. It's just so good to have so much interaction with you guys. Fills my heart to see you interacting with each other, all these like-minded people getting, you know, supporting each other in different ways. Oh, it's just really great. So I love you. If no one's told you this week or today, have an amazing week. Just be mindful, be in your body, be in yourself. It's a good place to be. And I'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful confidence. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi, let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything. You can email me at abby@abbymedcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymedcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.